Your reasons for listening to the show, well, those are your own. But just keep in mind that the views, information, or opinions expressed on the Tuttle Daily Podcast are solely those of the individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of our sponsors.
Yeah.
It's called free speech, people.
Nobody's forcing you to listen.
Get ready for your daily dose of Tuttle.
The all-time greatest intern slash producer we've ever had, of course, Tuttle. Tuttle in Florida.
From the Hobo Fish Camp, it's the Tuttle Daily Podcast.
No wonder nobody likes you, Tuttle. Everything's a goddamn debate.
All right, guys, welcome to another edition of the Tuttle Daily Podcast, Wednesday edition. Swear to God, the type of week that I've been having, I almost think that it would be a Friday. I want to hear from you guys. I'm a very lonely person. Oh, Mr. T. Hold on. I got to post that up there. The deal. The real deal. Tuttle in the house. What up, Mr. T? Vulture. Vulture checking in on my account. Says Lima Charlie. I know that what I'm about to say, it's going to make me sound very, very pathetic. What up, Ron Bartosz? Ron Bartosz. Hello, Tuttle. Man, I don't even care if it's just one person that is listening. I'm grateful for anybody that checks in. I really, really am. Mr. T, just project into the future, and you got like 18-year-old. So, what I was going to say is that I know it's going to make me sound pathetic, and I don't want anybody to think like I'm bitching about the situation that I'm in right now, because I'm very, very happy with what I'm doing. I am. Oh, Big Dick Rich, my buddy. Richie is checking in. You know, one of the things that I'm the most grateful for is my friendship with Colton and getting to meet Richie. Richie, without fail, Richie calls me every single week to check in. And why I want you guys to call in, you can do that 407-270-3044. Once again, that is 407-270-3044. And I will read any of your comments in the chat. What does Mr. T say? Bro, don't talk like you low. Talk like a boss. You're amazing on the Monsters of the Morning. One of the best of all time. The number one stunner. Look, Mr. T, okay. See, what is the weird thing is that a lot of people don't think that I have confidence. I do. I have confidence. But I'm also in a conundrum. Here, this is my ADHD coming into play. Because I do get squirreled. I get sidetracked on everything. But let me get back to the Richie thing. I am so grateful for Colton introducing me to Richie. Because Richie calls me every single week just to check in. One of the things that I have been having a lot of problems with is loneliness. I am lonely. And I do talk to people. I do talk to them on a regular basis. Vulture, I talk to him. I talk to Colton on a regular basis. I talk to Richie calls me at least once a week. But you got to realize from 2000 to 2010, I spent most of my time in Orlando, Central Florida, from Orlando back to Volusia County. That was my wheelhouse. And then at 2010, when I got fired from Clear Channel, which is now iHeartRadio, I made a lot of connections. I had a lot of friends there. But after that, from 2010 until present date, Tampa was my wheelhouse. Hillsborough, Pinellas, Pasco. I never thought in a million years that I would be like, oh, yeah, that is my area. Like, I would make so many connections. After spending the last 10 years in the Orlando area towards the East Coast, I thought that is where I was going to be. Musty. Musty? Musty? I'm going to agree with you. It fucking sucks. iForce sucks. Mr. T quit or left proactively? No, I got fired. I didn't quit or left. I got fired because I got caught trying to make deals behind the scene with potential sponsors with the NASCAR show that I was doing. So, yeah, no. Mr. T, I really do, because Mr. T says, stop talking weak, bro. You are literally one of the best. But Mr. T, I really do appreciate that. But also at the same time, I think that is why anybody likes me, because I do keep it real. I talk about everything. I talk about every single thing that's going on in my life, even if it makes me look bad or good. So what I'm trying to say is that all of my friends that I know that I, as of late, have a relationship with, they're over in Tampa. They're over in Tampa. And a lot of people, like, question, like, why do you and Colton hang out? And I'll tell you why. Colton is way more, like, mature than his age. And I've met a lot of people. Colton was the only guy that came and saw me every single day when I was in the mental institution, the mental hospital, whatever, however you want to word it. He was the only one that came and saw me every single day. And it was completely inconvenient for him, but he still did it. He did it every single day. And I'm also a loyal type of person. And I would like Colton, even if he didn't even do that every single day. But that right there, because Colton had to be there early in the morning. And I don't know if any of you guys know what's going on in the Tampa area when it comes to traffic. It's a motherfucker. It's a motherfucker to, like, get through that area. 275 I-4, the malfunction junction. It sucks. Oh, Musty, that's a great question. Because I see them all the time. Musty writes, I have a question for you. How long do you think it took to set up them buses that are buried along I-4. I've always thought about that. Number one, you had to dig the hole. Number two, did they do it by hand or did they use machinery? And then what did you use to put them in the said hole? Man, that I've always thought that. I completely forgot about those. And I cannot remember. Are they still there, Musty? Because I usually look at them when I'm driving towards Tampa. They're going to be on the side that is heading east. And I can't remember the last time. I can't remember the last time that I remember, like, looking at those. Mr. T writes, Tuttle, I like you better sober. I will agree. Yeah, I like myself sober. Is it boring? Yeah, it's boring as fuck. I really, really hate it. I so want to self-medicate. I so want to, like, I so want to have a good time because I got a lot of good things going for me. Like, I'm in the best shape of my life right now. I know, like, you can't tell. But compared to what I was when I was drinking, in 2020, at the beginning of 2020, I decided that I was going to make some changes. And it's been a long, hard journey. I know a lot of people talk about they're wanting to make changes in their life. They're wanting to make changes in their life to look better, to look healthier, and just feel better. And a lot of people get discouraged. I you know what? This is why I love doing this show. BDM ex-con writes, court today, ? Because I do know, and that's the other thing, people, that I went the longest time where I did not take pride in myself. I did not care about myself. And I'm not trying to flex or anything. I'm not. I have an addictive personality. When I got off all the alcohol, the mood stabilizing drugs, and all the other illicit drugs that I was on, I had to keep myself busy. Because that's how an addict's mind works. That is how an addict's mind works. You got to replace one thing for another, and that is exactly what I did. I got into Minecraft. I know Minecraft is probably the nerdiest thing that you could say that you did to get off of and to distract yourself from wanting to get fucked up, to wanting to be self-medicated. What up, Redbeard? Redbeard says, sup, Tuds? How are you? Fish on Jay, my good friend. You were flexing on the beach when we went fishing. Fish on Jay, can I call you after the show? I did a lot of fishing right there in the Indian River, the Mosquito Lagoon. But I had a blast. I loved the surf fishing. I loved it. I want to do it again. I really, really do. Mr. T writes, you're not flexing. You're being a wanker from 2030. Mr. T. I mean, Vulture already helps me out, but would you like to be an associate producer? Because if you are, email me Tuttle, Tuttle with two D's, T-U-D-D-L-E at gmail.com. All right, so I'm glad Fish on Jay is watching. Mr. BDM XCon, I love Haul Over Canal. Fish on Jay, my dad told him numerous stories about Haul Over Canal. And Fish on Jay went out to Haul Over Canal with me. We never caught a fish. But I was there when Fish on Jay, he had a hit at Haul Over Canal. And Fish on Jay, if he's in the chat room right now, I wish he can attest to this. Fish on Jay said it was one of the hardest hits that he ever had on a pole. And he said it hit so hard, it just snapped his line. It snapped his line like it was nothing. And Fish on Jay does not buy cheap line at all. He has braided line, and it just snapped it off like it was nobody's business. He had a crab right on there. And it absolutely destroyed his line. It did. I mean, Fish on Jay, can you call in? Fish on Jay, if you're listening right now, can you call in? Because I would like to talk to you about that. That guy, you know what, Vulture? Would you be okay, Vulture, if we took Vulture Jr. out surf fishing and Fish on Jay was with me? Because, like, he's really, really good. He is amazing when it comes to that. Twisted Movies. I like watching the videos of wrecking their expensive ass boats at Haul Over. It does happen. Man. All right. I'm going to call you Vulture later. And Fish on Jay, I think that would be great. Nelly Mandingo coming in with $5 super chatting on YouTube. Fish on Jay, call in, buddy. Because I really would like to talk to you about that. Cody. Oh, I think this is Fish on Jay. Hopefully it is. Hey, what up, Fish on Jay? Is this you? Hello.
Yo.
Hey, what's up, man?
What's up?
So
you got me at a good time. I just backed up the truck.
So I know that we did not catch anything at Haul Over, but you did say that that was one of the hardest hits that you had ever had on a line, right? When you were at Haul Over.
Let me tell you something. I knew when your dad told me the stories of Haul Over Canal. I knew that.
And this was like a year and a half. My dad had been telling you about Haul Over, like a year and a half before he passed away and stuff. Like, my dad was marking out to Haul Over. Wouldn't you say he was kind of marking it? He was definitely marking out to Haul Over.
Oh, he was totally marking out to it. And how
hard? Hey, hold on, Jay. Hold on, Jay. Okay. My guest is, hey, Alan.
Yeah, Tuttle.
Hey, buddy, how are you? Can you hold on just like a few seconds? I'm wrapping up my topic, and I'll be right with you because I really want to talk to you, okay? All right, I'll be right back, okay? All right, so I got Alan He's going to be my guest here real soon. But Fish on Jay. So my dad talked a lot about Hauliver. My dad has caught a lot of fish in that area. My dad told you about a black drum that he caught one time that he laid it on the tailgate and the head and the tail was laying off of both sides.
That's a black drum that is well over 55 inches. And it's, what's funny is that they grow even bigger than that.
And a lot of people don't believe me because my dad told me, and I'm not saying you didn't believe in Fish on Jay, but you also, when somebody tells you that the tide can be going one way, 1 minute, and then like 10 minutes later, it can be going the other way, I can understand why a lot of people would not like believe that, right?
What a lot of people don't understand about Hauliver Canal, and we're not talking about Hauliver in South Florida. We're talking about this one here and
by the Space Coast,
Brevard County. The Hauliver Canal is a man-made canal. Everyone listening it goes right to the Indian River and over to Mosquito Lagoon. So constantly you got water flowing constantly all the time. And all that water flowing, you got a lot of bait coming in and out. So all of these fish are doing what these small bait fish are doing. Yeah. They're following them in and out.
Exactly. And I know we didn't catch any. Oh, we also met some pretty badass people that day, too.
Former military.
Yeah, former military guy, family guy. His kid was like. Yeah, that kid's going to grow up to be a man's man because he was out there with his knife. He was cutting things up. He was wanting to do everything.
Oh, that kid's going to be a stud when he grows up.
That's what I thought. But, I mean, you threw a crab out, and I will let you go after this. But when you threw that out and that fish hit that piece of bait that you threw out, You don't put cheap line on your poles.
No. And my gear, and you know for a fact, my gear is not cheap. I had 65-pound braid, and at the end of that, I had, I think it was a 75-pound leader, and with the drag loose with a circle hook. And one hit, and it ran. And I grabbed that rod, and I tightened the drag just a little bit.
And he snapped
and it. It felt like at the other end of that hook, it was a runaway dump truck.
Yeah, well, and it's not like it was a fish with sharp teeth. That was just a fish that just boss hogged his way and ripped your line.
Yeah, I could not believe it. For all we know, it could have been a huge shark. For all we know, because we know that shark, you know, big bull sharks travel through in and out through that canal.
I was so pissed that I lost that shark. I really, really was. Oh, yeah, man. Can we go surf fishing soon? Can we go surf fishing soon?
You need to call me because I found a spot for us with free parking.
All right. Well, listen, I'm going to let you go fish on Jay, but I'll be in touch with you, okay?
Sweet, dude. Okay, all right,
man.
Later.
See you. Bye. All right. Hey, Alan. Thanks. Hold on, I gotta bring. Hold on, I got Alan on. Hey, Alan, I'm sorry about that, man. I feel like I kept a great. I gotta tell you, like you, out of all the guests that I've had on, Alan, best dress. Like seriously.
So never underestimate the power of a blazer.
A blazer. I love the Irish accent. How are you, Alan?
I was just thinking, should I give it a bit of the Tura-Lura? You know,
no, I mean,
amp up Paddy Wackery, or no, is it Irish
just,
enough?
I want all the slang. I want you to go over the top. I want you to, like, say, like...
We'll have the crack. We'll drink Guinness. We'll say a 33.
Yeah, so, but, see, but that's the thing about America. Like... I mean, you're probably drinking alcohol out of that coffee cup right there. Who knows?
I'd like to live up to the Irish stereotype, but that's literally just water.
No, I know. Just water. Just water.
Water.
But that
tea. You don't pronounce the T in there.
No, but you know what? That's the thing I like about America, Alan, is that we regionally, we just have a diverse mixture of dialect and accents. Mm. And a lot of people, you know, outside, I consider myself an Anglophile. I do. I am a nerd for Doctor Who. I know that makes me sound like a dumb American, like, oh, he loves some Doctor Who. But I do, but there's so many dialects in the United Kingdom as well. And you guys are a small little, like, island-type place. Here in America, we got a lot of, I mean, you got the Northeast, you got the Boston accent, you got the New York, the Long Island, the New Jersey, and then you get into the South, and then just, that's where it just goes off off the charts. How are you, Alan?
I'm doing good, Tuttle. I have to say, it's my first time, I think, ever talking with someone with a mononym. So this is a first for me.
Ah, first for you. Yeah,
this is a first. I thought it might be Cher or Beyonce, but turns out it was going to be the first.
Hey, Alan. Okay, so I'm just being honest, okay?
Yeah.
I know a little bit about you. I do, but I've always been the type that I like to do interviews. Like, I'm just meeting somebody street and just have a conversation.
Mm.
But before we get into that conversation, can you tell my audience a little bit about yourself and how they can find you? How can they find you on social media? How can they find you on your website? The floor is yours.
Okay, thanks very much. So my name is Alan Clark. I'm a psychotherapist in private practice in Ireland, which is not in the United Kingdom, Tuttle. I need to clear that up for you.
Well,
you
yeah,
piss
yeah.
off a lot of Irish people.
But whoa. But you have Ireland and Northern Ireland. So are you a part of...
Yeah, yeah.
So are you a part
of... My girlfriend, my partner, she lives in Northern Ireland. Mm-hmm. So I drive over a small little bridge and I'm in a whole other country, whole other currency, whole other absolute distinct country from... And this is where all the troubles begin because people say, yeah, you come from that side of that piece of land there. Yeah, we don't like you. Oh, you come from that side? Yeah, well, we don't like you on that side.
Is it that bad? Or you know what? Hold on. Mm. Hold that question. I want to let you promote everything before we get into the interview.
No problem.
Okay?
Yeah. So my name is Alan Clark. I'm a psychotherapist in private practice in Ireland. My degree is in counseling and psychotherapy, and my master's is in child and adolescent psychotherapy. And I am also a host of the Straight Talking Mental Health podcast, which does exactly what it says on the tin. Straight talk, mental health.
Here, I'm just going to go bluntly. I'm going to hit you over the head with this. 2019, I tried to kill myself. Tried to hang myself. I got Baker-acted. Mm. I spent a lot of time in a mental institution or hospital.
Mm.
And America, I don't think in the United States, I don't think we take mental health as serious as we should. We don't. I think big pharmaceutical, I think we are our solution to the problem is to over-medicate instead of trying to treat the problem. Is that something you guys deal with?
Oh, yeah, we get the same. Yeah, we absolutely get the same. And the problem with that, and, you know, without getting into the big pharma thing or anything like that, it's cheaper. It's cheaper to medicate someone than to actually get to the root cause of why they want to kill themselves. Or, for example, I had a client recently that I had to contact the hospital to say this person has some serious suicidal intent, you know, and it probably held a little bit more weight coming from myself because as a therapist, I was ringing up saying, look, this person is at serious risk.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, okay. So they rang me back, interviewed in the hospital, blah, blah, blah. Sent a note to her doctor. And she was given an appointment for a psychiatrist in August. So that was back in May. So, you know, just don't kill yourself between now and August.
No. But I mean, it's a weird situation, but I also know that there is a lot of alcoholism in that area. Okay, is that because of self medicating, because of trauma that's happened, maybe in their early years and stuff, and you know, here living in the South, you know, you're supposed to be a tough guy. You're supposed to be tough. Mm-hmm. You're not supposed to talk about things. Because when I was younger, not saying my parents were bad people, but if you went to them and you were like, oh, I'm depressed, I'm not feeling good. Or like, what do you got to be depressed about? What do you got to be?
Did
this
you have
and
my
that?
Father?
No, but I mean, am I right or am I wrong though? Oh, that does happen.
Yeah, yeah.
And a lot of people will turn to alcohol, drugs, to self medicate and stuff.
Mm.
Does that happen
yeah,
where you're at?
Yeah, absolutely. We're Ireland. This is what we pride ourselves on. We pride ourselves on being alcoholics. That's our cultural identity. You know, we've Guinness. We've, you know, that this is our shtick, and it's entirely, you know, a nation with an inferiority complex. You know, whether it's been colonized by the British or, you know, sectarianism, anything like that. We are emotionally repressed, and we chemically comfort ourselves with alcohol. You know, and it's absolutely that sort of toxic masculinity attitude of man up and. You know, I'll give you something to cry about, and, you know, well, don't be expecting to be told or loved, or don't be expecting to be held or anything like that. It's 100% the same.
Man, and doesn't that kind of compound the problem, though? Mm. Like, it does, right? I mean, I know living in the South here in the United States, it's just like, you're expected to just be a man, and you need to, you know, why are you crying? Or, you know, if you have feelings as a man in the South of the United States, or you're an empath, or you're sensitive, it's like, what are you? Are you gay? I mean, no, I'm not trying to be offensive.
Absolutely the same here. Absolutely the same attitude in Ireland. Yeah. And certainly the attitude that I grew up with. I mean, I'm 45, and you know, I went to an all-boys school, a Catholic all-boys school for 6 years, and then went into what you would call high school, into secondary school for 5 years in an all-boys school. That's entirely the MO of anyone in that under those situations in Ireland.
So what needs to be changed, though, at all? Like, because I think the root of, because I'm a victim. It wasn't because of my parents. I had extreme childhood trauma growing up. I did. And a lot of people are embarrassed. A lot of people don't want to be open and honest about stuff. I'll tell you the reason why I didn't. You want me to be honest? Why?
Absolutely.
And I'm not gonna call anybody out or anything. But the reason I didn't tell my parents, because I will be straight up honest. I didn't want my dad to go to jail. I didn't want my dad, because I knew I also blocked a lot of things out. I did. And then I remembered stuff, and it happened, and I wanted to talk about it even when I was a minor and stuff, but I didn't, because I knew what would happen if I opened up and said, because I'm just being straightforward. My dad died a year ago, but if I told my dad would have killed this person. No, I'm straightforward, but I also, that's the thing about some people, they put other people's well-being over their own. I also think that's a problem, right?
Yeah. Yeah, particularly young children, and whether that is, you know, a caregiver, be it a parent or, you know, extended family or grandparent or anything like that. As children, we need the comfort and protection of our parents.
Yeah, and I'm sorry if I'm treating you like a therapist right now.
No,
but
that's what I'm here.
I'm just
I love talking about this stuff.
You know, a lot of people.
We'd love to have you on the podcast if that's something you'd be up for.
I'm going to get you my contact info, because I would. I'm not using this as a therapy session. The only reason I talk about this stuff, it's not because of me, because when I tried to harm myself, I did that one morning before I was going to do the radio show, okay? I woke up. I felt like an empty vessel. I just did not feel right. I could not explain it. I just felt empty. Does that make sense at all? Like, I just felt like an empty vessel. I felt like I didn't exist.
Mm.
And go ahead. Sorry.
Go ahead. Yeah. Go ahead. No, absolutely. And I'd see that with in clients. You know, some clients, they prepare themselves for suicide. They know what's coming.
I didn't prepare.
They've made up their mind. Other clients have said where they just like that, something just snapped.
Mm-hmm.
And in that moment, they made that decision.
But I was also like doing drugs. I was drinking at the time. I don't know if it was a chemical imbalance.
Mm.
Luckily, I was not successful because we have very cheap labor here in Florida. And what I tried to hang myself with, they did shoddy work hanging the ceiling fan and stuff. I'm glad you're laughing because I laugh at it because, I mean, what else can you do? You got to laugh at it because if you don't laugh at things.
Yeah.
So I was not successful. I went into the radio show an hour and a half after I tried to do that. And I talked about it. I talked about it because, number one, I wanted to hold myself accountable, like in case I wanted to do it again. And then also, for some reason, once again, with me caring about people more than myself, in case there was somebody in the audience that was listening and they were thinking, that's the only reason I did it. And guess what? It was the worst 11 days of my life being in that place, being in that hospital. I hated it. I hated it.
Yeah, we recently had a guest on the podcast, Peter Fox, an author, and he spoke about he was in there for months after suicide, and he spoke about he's in the States, and he spoke about his experience of being in the psychiatric hospital, and you know, he knew he needed to be there. Because he knew if he didn't go there.
Oh, it did me good. It did. Yeah. Because it opened up my eyes. It did.
Mm.
Because me working in broadcasting and stuff, I wanted to take it all in. I wanted to find out what people's stories are about. And a lot of people had trauma. A lot of people had abuse, whatever it may be.
Mm.
That they ended up there because of self-medication. That's the one thing that's always going into it. Trauma and self-medicating because we don't have the healthcare system here. Mm-hmm. Also, people don't want to ask for help because they're embarrassed.
Yeah.
And that was the thing that woke me up because I was over-medicated, Alan. I was. I mean, I'm not saying I'm some type of stud or anything, but I was over-medicated. I was on bipolar manic depressive drugs, and I thought that I was, you know, worried about my career, and I was trying to be great and good, and I wasn't chasing after women. So, no, that's not the case. It killed my sex drive. It did.
Yeah, yeah.
It did.
That's the side effects of many of the medications that people go on. It'll kill your libido. And, you know, you touched on something important there of, you know, I remember speaking to a client before who had been in, you know, had addiction problems and had been in treatment. And they learned a great one while they were in treatment. And they said that not everyone that's had trauma becomes an addict.
No.
But every addict has had trauma.
Yep.
And I think there's a lot of truth in that because you go through your lives in this effort to be comforted, you know, to deal with or to not deal with. And the problem with drink or drugs or whatever like that is it makes you feel better, but it doesn't make the situation better.
No, it doesn't because you feel worse. You feel worse after it, and then you're chasing that. I know, like, I'm not asking for details, but, like, what is one story that has stood out to you through your time doing your podcast, your show and stuff, that has been like, that has touched you the most. And I'm not, you don't have to mention any names or anything.
No,
like that.
I won't mention it. Well, they're there, the guests are on the podcast. I mean, even in private practice, you know, I hear stories of horrific childhood abuse and horrific trauma. And, you know, every day I'm like, fuck, that's like, Jesus, that's the fucking worst I've ever heard. Like, until someone else comes in the door.
Does it ever, do you ever get affected by hearing these stories? Like, do you take on any of those? I know you're professional and stuff, but does it ever affect you? Because, I mean, you hear stories about PTSD, law enforcement that see bad things or hear bad things. That it does get transferred. Like, does it ever affect you as well?
Very rarely. I'm pretty good at compartmentalizing. I'm on the spectrum. I'm autistic. I don't know if that helps to compartmentalize everything of when I close the door, I close the door kind of thing. And when I go home, I go home. Like, I've got friends that are in law enforcement. I've one friend who was a what do we call a Garda in Ireland. And, you know, he was called out to a hotel room where a guy had blown his brains out with a shotgun. They're not trained for that. Like, you know, this is my mate that, you know, he's just a copper. He's on the street. And then all of a sudden he's walking into a hotel room where someone has used a shotgun to blow their brains out. One of the standout ones, I suppose, for myself on the podcast, we had Sean on, who was a guest around borderline personality disorder. And actually we have it in the ad clip for the podcast. And he said, like, his grandfather tried to chop his father's head off with an axe.
When his father
was 8 years old, his grandfather tried to chop his head off with an axe because his father killed a chicken. When he wasn't allowed to chop his head off, he tried to drown him. So you see how this trauma just begets trauma, this generational trauma that just gets passed on and passed on. Sean then, you know, with his, in the relationship with his father, he spoke about, you know, I opened the door to him one night from the pub and he just punched me in the face. Like, you know, and these are people with deeply, deeply troubled childhoods.
Do you?
And it just gets passed on.
Okay, so I'm glad you just said that because I was about to ask you. Is it, like, here, I'll give you an example. Racism, you're not born racist, you're taught racism, okay? Is mental health genetically passed on? Because a lot of people will debate that. Like, or is the next generation taught from what they observe from the last generation and how they act and stuff?
Well, it doesn't even have to be taught. It's epigenetically, it's passed on to our DNA.
So it is.
So severe trauma affects our DNA. And
sorry.
So regardless of if you know, for example, you know, in the States, you know, you've got a large Jewish community, you know, people whose grandparents would have been, you know, in the Holocaust and stuff like that. They are genetically affected by experiences that their grandparents have had through the changing of their DNA.
I hope I can be like speak freely with you, but
absolutely
being an American and the TV process, but I'm telling you right now, when you, because I had not got to that yet. You were talking about being autistic and stuff. I thought, man, this would be a good fucking TV show. Like, a therapist, a psychologist, a psychiatric type person that has autism that helps people out. Come on, you got to admit, Alan, that's a pretty good pitch for an American TV show, right? Like,
well,
seriously.
I think they have the good doctor. You got the good doctor over there.
I watched that, and he was good as Norman Bates in the Bates Hotel series. Mm. It was good, and he's a great actor and everything, but he just dealt with the medical side of it, the physical side. Yeah. I think it takes it another level when you're dealing with the mental side of it. And I think it's brilliant. I mean, come on, we need to work on this show, Alan. I think 100%.
I mean, I was 44 when I was diagnosed. It was was only last year.
Why? How long? Why did it take that long though? Like,
because I masked it so well.
And did your parents see any of the signs or no?
No. And to this day, literally not one member of my family has asked me about the autism diagnosis.
How was your childhood growing up?
It was a childhood spent on the periphery, feeling like an outsider, feeling not good enough. My father was an alcoholic. My mother was depressed. Parents split up when I was, I don't know what age.
Did they get along?
Again, a few times.
And if I'm asking
not,
any
not
questions,
particularly.
But I mean, was there any physical abuse that you saw growing up?
Not in that I witnessed. That I witnessed. Absolutely, loads of fight and arguments, particularly around money and my father's drinking. I remember being sent up to the pub to get him out of. You know, this is pre-mobile phones. You know, if you were lucky, you had a phone in your house, and you would ring the pub and oh no, he's not here. She'd ring another pub. Oh, he's not here. So I'd be sent up to the town to get my father to tell him to come home and things like that. A common enough occurrence probably in Ireland for my generation.
Why do you think that area, like what is the legal drinking age around there?
Legal 18. Which 18. You're probably going to be served. Yeah, you're probably going to be served in the pub.
Earlier, you could 17. Even get, like, if you, like, it was a smaller pub or something, you get away
with it. I mean,
when
I didn't drink as a teenager, but I would have been in the pub when I was 15. Like, my friends would have been drinking. And basically, once you don't cause any hassle.
How old were you when you had your first drink?
I was 21, just almost 21.
Really?
By accident.
That's shocking.
I got drunk by accident at a birthday party. And someone handed me champagne, and I felt like Puff Daddy. I felt like P. Diddy,
man,
sipping champagne. I was like, oh, this is some good shit.
So, back to the autism and stuff, like, how has that affected you? Like, you know, dating, meeting women, or just dating in general? Like, how did that affect you?
Well, I look back, as you know, I can look back retrospectively now, sort of through the lens of autism, and I see every single relationship I've ever been in or every job I've ever had issues being there because of autism.
Did you not know at the time though? Because I've been learning. I've been learning. Like, I think that something's wrong with me. Like, I was married for a while. Also, like, I worked in radio and it gave me opportunities to meet women and stuff. I was married from 2006 to 2014. But now I'm like, what's wrong with me? Because it's just like, I'm a good person. But then sometimes people, like, I'm overly nice. Have you ever heard this? Like, I'm overly nice. I'm overly respectful and stuff. And a lot of women that I talk to, they'll say they get freaked out by that.
You're too nice. Do you get that?
No, I'm being honest, and I'm not trying to, like, you know, use this as a therapy session, but sometimes people are just
take advantage.
No, but sometimes people are overly nice because of things that happen to them. I apologize for a lot of things, and that
will be very common with someone that's experienced trauma in childhood. So, you know, you become a people pleaser, you become a placator.
Why is that? Know, why?
Well, as
that?
A child, your safety depended on it. Your literal life depended on it. You know, you have to remember that. You know, now as adults, we look at adults and, you know, we see people maybe eye to eye, or maybe they're a little bit taller, maybe a little bit smaller. When you're a child, you could be 2 foot high. You could be dealing with someone that's 6 foot 2, 6 foot 3. That person could literally kill you with one, just pick you up and throw you against the wall.
Yeah.
So we learn quickly of what's acceptable and what's not acceptable. As young children, we, you know, every child wants to please their parent. And, you know, that can carry on throughout life. And this is why, you know, and I've heard it so many times from clients that, you know, there would have been horrific abuse in childhood. And yet they still, as adults to this day, crave the acceptance of their parents. Just even in death, you know, one client at the minute, she's 72. And she told me, like, even after my mother died, I took care of all the funeral arrangements, did everything she wanted. She said, because I think I was still looking for that acceptance from her. Even in death, I was still trying to earn her acceptance.
Why do we do that? Is this a case of we have just become too intelligent as a species that we just overthink things? Like, why have we over evolved is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, well, we have that. I mean, and that's, it's this, you know, this thing and that rattles around in our skull that has made us top of the food chain, that has given us language, that has enabled us to use logic to plan. This is what's got us up to the top of that. But the brain is millions of years old and has evolved, you know, pre-human, pre-primate. It's an old vessel, and it's not going to change because society has changed so much in the last 100 years.
Mm.
And this is why we have anxiety, because our brain is so good, it anticipates threats and anticipates something that might be safe, even if it's just made up shit in our own heads.
No, I get it. I get it, because I am so fascinated with the mind. You know, it's sometimes it can be your best friend by blocking out things. It really does, because like some of the stuff that happens to people, the brain kind of does kind of like protect you. Like it's almost like an airbag or a bicycle helmet or something. But then it eventually sometimes will come back at a later date and it's just like, it fucks you. It does. It's weird.
But your brain's not there to make you happy. Your brain's there to keep you safe.
Well, the brain is always going to put doubt, though, right? But yeah, I've heard like Mike Tyson, one of the greatest fighters of all time. Mm. Your brain, your mind is not your friend. It's not. But aren't you your mind, though? Like, see, but that also, and I'm not a religious person at all.
Mm.
I don't believe in religion. I think religion, I do believe that energy never dies and all that good stuff. But what I'm trying to say is that if you are your mind, how can your mind be your worst enemy? Because it's always going to put doubt in your life, right?
Mm. Yeah, and particularly so, again, as we talk about trauma and childhood, you know, if you get someone that grows up with a secure attachment, that's grown up in a very safe environment, they're not going to have as many doubts. They're not going to have those automatic negative thoughts where their brain has learned to be on high alert. You know, they've got a brain that is thriving. Whereas if you have trauma, you have a brain that's been surviving.
Oh man, you tweeted at me. I'm following you right now, by the way. Hey, whoa, hold on. Is this sorry, I don't want to offend. Is this your significant other with you?
In the picture?
On Twitter, yeah.
Yeah, it probably is, yeah.
Man, Alan. Ooh,
there she is, look, she's on the mug. She's on my mug.
No, Alan. Dude, like seriously. What is going on, man? Like, I'm not trying to be disrespectful or anything, but Alan, come on, Alan.
She's a good looking girl.
No, she is. Like, how did you meet her and stuff?
We actually met online.
Alan, like every autistic person in the whole world should be like, look, if Alan. No, Alan.
This ugly motherfucker here.
No, I'm not saying. I'm just saying you're autistic. No, come on, Alan. I mean, chicks. Is she Irish as well too? Ireland?
She's Northern Ireland.
Yeah, Northern Ireland.
Yeah. So she's from Oma, where the you're familiar with the Oma.
All right. So you're Irish. You're in Ireland. She's Northern.
I'm Southern Ireland. I'm Republic of Ireland.
Oh, so then you support the IRA then? No? No, yeah. I'm sorry. I'm just a bad joke. Yeah. I do apologize.
By default, probably.
Wait a minute.
As someone that was raised Catholic.
I got to follow her. I'm not going to be creepy or anything, but man, Alan, come on, man. What's the age difference? Come on, buddy. Like,
she's 36. I'm 45.
Oh, well, dude, that's, I mean, you know what? You give every 45-year-old On top of that, you give any autistic person in their 40s hope. Like, seriously, man. Helen. Jesus, man. Like, seriously. Good for you, man. I'm gonna have to.
I'll be sure to let her know once we log.
No, because then she's gonna get creeped out and she's gonna be like, "Oh, that dumbass American."
She's a really good person.
No, I know.
She's got the looks and she's got good personality.
What does she do?
She can't even be a bitch with it. Like,
what does she do?
She works in retail.
Oh, she does. Okay. Well, I mean, listen. I mean, I know you want to keep things separate and everything like that, but so, man. I can't get over that. I'm sorry. So, like, I want to get into this. So, I'm all over the place. I suffer from OCD, bipolar, manic depressive, ADHD. I got all types of problems, but I'm all natural. Well,
actually,
besides,
as you mentioned, ADHD, myself and Ashley were only talking tonight. She did an online test, and she tested for ADHD because I've said it for ages.
I mean, the only medication for mental, I go 15 milligrams in the morning, 15 milligrams after lunch on my Adderall. That's all I take. I was on Risperidone, which was horrible. I hated it. The Zoloft. I get those brain zaps. Do you know what I'm talking about? Like,
yeah.
You get those electrical brain. What causes that, by the way?
I'm not sure, to be honest, but it is definitely going to be as a result. What I've seen in clients is as a side effect of some medication.
Yeah.
That they're on. Yeah.
It's weird, and then I know it sounds weird, but I got goosebumps. Like, I got, like, my skin reacted. It wasn't like an allergic reaction, but I just, like, I got goosebumps all the time, and it was just weird. And I got to tell you, like, I've done a lot of self-medicating, and I'm clean and everything now, but the worst withdrawal that I had out of all those was the psychotropic drugs, like the mood stabilizings, by far the worst thing that I've ever gotten off of. Hated it.
Let me put a question to you. What was it that prompted you to get sober then? What was it that prompted you to come off the non-prescribed drugs, I suppose?
Well,
just out of curiosity.
Because it was affecting... I was already on those drugs, you know, the prescribed drugs. And then I was doing other drugs and alcohol. And the research I did, it's a bad formula. It's a bad formula to be on those because you're getting overstimulated. And then you're on stuff that's not keeping you too high or too low. And you're on depressants and stuff. I got off of that stuff, got sober, and then I just saw, like, in our country, I just think we over-prescribe pills. Yeah. Because, say what you want, here in this country, the lobbyists, big pharma... only illegal drug that I do, which I think... I smoke weed. It helps me out with my anxiety. It's natural. There's no, like, chemicals or anything being put into it. And it helps me. I haven't done it in quite some time, but I think that that should be decriminalized nationwide here. But it's not going to be.
It's only in certain states, isn't it?
It is. You get medical here in Florida. Medical here in Florida. But, it's recreational in other states. And let's be honest, how many people does alcohol and tobacco kill in our country, in your country? It's DUIs included, like accidents where drunk drivers are driving around and killing people, cigarettes from cancer, liver disease from alcohol. You know how much weed you would have to smoke to overdose on marijuana?
Yeah.
It's crazy. And you want to know why? Because big tobacco, big alcohol, big pharmaceutical lobbyists are putting money in the politicians' pockets, and it's not going to change. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah, well, it's still illegal in Ireland. There's no.
Don't you guys call it puff over in the UK? You know, get a little bit of puff.
Yeah, weed.
Puff. Weed.
Yeah. We take everything from the States, so it just filters through to us about 5 or 10 years later.
What football?
So we're now getting crack and stuff.
Oh man, what football team do you support over there? Because I'm a big football fan. Americans, soccer. I'm not talking soccer. About NFL, but football. Like, what football team do you support over there?
So I'm not a huge sports fan.
Oh, you're not. Okay.
But when I was growing up, I would have supported Liverpool.
Yeah,
in the UK. But then my friend Jim is he's the manager of the Ireland under 21 football team, soccer team.
Man,
they're doing pretty good at the minute.
Wales, Jim's a good guy. See, Wales is the one country out of that whole lot. See, I'm using UK. I said out of the whole lot of the separate countries over there. Wales is one of those ones. What's your thoughts on Wales? Because I went to the United Kingdom to watch. Because you said Liverpool, I support Manchester United. But I went to Wales. Why does everybody look down on Wales?
I think they just kind of exist just there on their own. Like everyone's kind of famous. Scotland's famous, you know, Braveheart and stuff like that. And you know, so the UK being England, Scotland, Wales, and Northern Ireland, and then the Republic of Ireland being a separate country. I think Wales just kind of sticks to themselves, and then they're known as being sheep shaggers.
Yeah, I was about to say that. Everybody was like, yeah, they're sheep fuckers. They fuck sheep and stuff. I get it. But I'm also a big Doctor Who fan, and I went to Cardiff because they did a lot of filming in Cardiff and stuff. All right. Hey, Alan, I hope you enjoyed this interview and stuff. 100%. Hopefully you're not like when you get off and you tell your hot ass significant other, and you're like, oh man,
have to let me know how I can listen to this back so I can play it back for it.
Oh no, I'll send you the link and everything, but
yeah,
man, I can't get over that.
How did it happen?
No, you're older than me, you're older than me, and you have autism, but you dress way nicer than I do. And
the
you
blazer,
got,
man, that's what you need to do. You need to get yourself a blazer because it's just a t-shirt, underneath. Never underestimate the power of a blazer.
But it's also the accent. It really is. Yeah. It is.
But see, she's got a really fucked up accent because she grew up in Northern Ireland, so she's got a bit of that. And then she moved to Yorkshire in England when she was 10 or 11 as a teenager. So she's got this hybrid mix of a Yorkshire, North England accent and a Northern Ireland accent.
Mr. T says, hot Peaky Blinders. I got into Peaky Blinders as well, too. Man,
with Killian Murphy, who is Irish.
Yeah, I must seem like the most dumb, stereotypical American. You're like, oh man, this guy just asked me all the dumbass American questions and everything.
I'm here to inform, Tuttle. I'm here to inform. That's
but no, like seriously though, I want to leave on a serious point. I really enjoyed this interview because, I mean, mental health is important to me. Have you watched the TV show Barry? Yep.
No, that's with...
Bill Hader. Bill Hader.
Bill
from,
Hader, yeah.
It is... See, I would love to have you on to get your review of the show because he is a hitman. I'll give you the gist. Hitman used to be a Marine for the Americans, had PTSD, comes back, has a family member take advantage of his skills, and that's why he became the hitman that he is. Mm. It is a dark, dark comedy, and a lot of people think
sounds
comedians...
like my kind of humor.
No, but a lot of people think comedians can't nail the dramatic things.
Oh, I think it's the other way. I think comedians in serious roles nail them.
Most comedians have had trauma. The funny ones, they've had it.
Yeah.
I promise you, I would love just the first season. because the first season, more funny than dark. Second is more of a even mixture of funny to dark. And then the third just gets, like, to the point of being uncomfortable.
Mm.
And I really, really would love to hear your opinion.
I'll binge watch. I'm happy to come back.
And it's on Sky. It is on Sky because my friend Amy, who lives in Wales, even though you... that
down in Wales.
Wales. But and nobody speaks Welsh anymore. I mean, they have their own language, but
that's
nobody.
Like Ireland, no one speaks Irish.
Yeah,
we do have our own language, but no one can speak it.
What is the language called? Is it the Gaelic?
Gaelic,
yeah. What do you guys think about Americans that like go overboard for St. Patrick's Day? Or are you guys like, fuck them?
We've got one rule, and that's don't call it Paddy. Don't call it St. Patty's Day. That's it. As long as you call it Paddy's Day, P-A-D-D-Y and not P-A-T-T-Y.
But
that's it. We go for it. We just don't like the patty.
But Americans, we got St. Patrick's Day, and then we look for any reason to just get like shit face because we do Cinco de Mayo as well too. Like we do we celebrate the Mexican holiday. And, yes.
Fuck off, but we take all of your holidays. You need an excuse to drink, but then you need to fuck off.
Yeah, hey, Alan, I don't want to keep you too long, but before I let you go, I'm going to let you have the floor. Tell my audience how they can check out any of your content and how they can follow you online.
Yeah, so you'll find the Straight Talking Mental Health Podcast on any of your podcast providers. The website is stmhpodcast.com, and that's our handle then across Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook, STMH Podcast.
Hey, Alan, I just followed you back on Twitter and everything. I'm going to send you my contact info.
I'd love to have you on.
I want to be on your podcast, but I got a lot of ideas running through my head that I would, like, absolutely love to, like, get a regular thing going with you.
I would love to do that.
All right, Alan. Hey, I hope you have a wonderful night. I know I kept you up late. Hell, it's...
No.
It's 8:07, so it's after midnight where you're at right now. So
it is, yeah. It's one a.m. in the morning.
Still five hours difference.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, Alan. Thank you. I can't thank you enough, and I'll be in contact. Okay.
Can't wait.
All right.
You take care of yourself.
All right, man. Thank you. All right, guys. I'm gonna get out of here. Hopefully, you enjoyed tonight's show. Hopefully, you guys stay safe, and I will talk to you tomorrow.